I'm so happy to meet you, Tanya Hees, and that we could be here. And I want to ask you, can you remember and can you tell about the moment when you first had the idea of changing the heels instead of changing the shoes?
It's actually funny. I can even remember the shoes I was wearing. So I was probably 19 years old. And I was working as an intern for Canada's Foreign Affairs at that time. So maybe I was 20, and I was wearing these beautiful burnt orange suede pumps. And at the time, because I'm epileptic, I had lost my driver's license. So I had to go everywhere, either by public transport, walking, or bike. And it meant I would walk, sometimes I would walk 20 to 30 kilometers a day, and always in these heels. And I just remember thinking, this is so insanely uncomfortable. I should do something about this. And then, you know, I'm at Foreign Affairs, but I'm seeing the very first technological revolution take over my hometown, which is Ottawa. And Ottawa had been, you know, a sleepy civil service town. And then suddenly there's Nortel and there's Newbridge and there's all of these telecommunications companies coming up. And suddenly the bookshelves are filled with books talking about how to program in DOS and Fortran and all of these languages, which I didn't know. You know, at that time I'm studying French. That's my idea of studying a language. And I started feeling very insecure about not having enough knowledge of technology. So kind of this fear of technology, but an attraction to technology. Then when I come to France, you know, my French isn't good enough to get a job and my diplomas are not accepted. So I have to retrain completely. And I ended up going to French business school. And school in France is very different from school in Canada, in that in France, when you get into one of these elite schools, you don't actually have to do well, because you had to do well to get into the school. And I just loved this because it kind of meant you could take a lot of liberties to explore things that you're not good in. So I decided to specialize in finance and in technology. And then in 2008, I'm working in finance. And I realized I couldn't care less. I'm earning an incredible salary to do absolutely nothing except for have a few lunches and listen to people who care very deeply about money and not about anything else. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to use the financial crash as a way of getting out of this sector. So it's not my thing. And I want to do something that I'm deeply passionate about. So I think if I'd stayed in Canada, I would have wanted to go towards politics. But in France, I can't, because whatever I do, I will always be La Petite Canadienne, and I'll never truly be French because it's a very different nation here. So this became sort of my political statement, and it was a political statement about feminism. It was a political statement about consumption. It was definitely a very strong anti-fashion statement, because my brand is really about style and looking good. And timelessness. I'd say ever since I was a child, maybe the story that resonates with me the most is The Emperor Has No Clothes. And this notion that people always say the same thing at the same time, whether it's real or not. And I wanted to do something that was real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you remembered your ideas.
The idea had never left. No. So that idea stayed with me every single day of my entire life, because that discomfort of wearing high heels, yet the attraction to how I looked. And, you know, I used to be a rower. In fact, I was the French university champion for women's eight. So I had a very stocky, muscular appearance. And heels was sort of my shortcut to actually looking like a girl, which was important to me.
Yeah. And with this idea, how many trials and errors Did you have, you found the Dovetail connection as a solution that fulfills
really
all
hard.
Your requirements?
No, it was really hard. My first instinct was to buy a company in the United States which had failed, and they did these kind of foldable heels. So I did a lot of market tests, and I saw a Parisian woman wouldn't be caught dead wearing them. So then I started just hiring engineers. And by the end of it, it took 3 years, 14 different engineers and designers, with me doing a lot of communication between the different teams.
Four different.
I sold one of my apartments. So I actually sold my apartment to finance all of this because we were never funded. And it was extremely difficult. Sorry, in terms of trials, I nearly went to market with something that functionally worked, and I'd just gone out to buy groceries, and I came back from grocery shopping, and my youngest daughter, Sabine, was playing with the prototype, and she'd broken it. And then I thought, of course she would break it, because it had this piece which was hanging out, and you could just sort of play with it. And I thought, how many women would have children who would be as tempted as my daughter? So we actually went completely back, reverse engineered what we had, and it took 9 months to reverse engineer it. And then it took another 7 months to miniaturize. So yes, it was very long, and there were definitely several ideas. But in terms of real proofs of concept, only two which were credible.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you told me the Dovetail connection was a connection from the wood industry to...
Yeah, even in biblical times, you would have this notion of wooden pieces sliding into each other. And because of the same junction that we have on our shoes, it would stick. So this is something that's, you show any carpenter or any engineer, it would be absolutely basic, fundamental.
It's basic. I can run with them.
It's just completely basic. Yeah. Yes.
And seeing the whole retrospective, what were the three most important skills that you had that you need to have the whole way from the first idea or from the decision at 2008, I want to do my thing, up to the moment then the shoes were in your shop?
You need to be incredibly tenacious, because not only is it technically difficult, but nobody is waiting for you and nobody is happy. So, for example, I can't find retailers who want to work with the brand because they don't want to deal with the extra heels. Or the French Federation of Shoes immediately said, this isn't even a shoe. So just to become a member of the French Federation of Shoes took me 2 or 3 years. So what I hadn't realized was, one, how hard it would be, and two, how negative people would be. Sorry, I have a throat ache. So I hadn't realized, people would come to my stands and trade fairs and they'd say, you're a liar, this shoe isn't a shoe, it's garbage, who are you? If this was possible, Louboutin would have done it. I've never heard of you. If this was something that was a good idea, it would have been done before. So all of that criticism was extremely difficult. In 2018, I came home from the shop and I was crying. And I realized I'd been crying all the time. And my second child, was making a decision about whether he was going to go to engineering prépa or business prépa. And I said, well, either way, you can start your own company. Both are great. And he goes, Mummy, you cry every day of your life because people are so evil to you. And he said, there's no way I'm ever going to start a company. I think he might have changed his mind. But yes, you need an enormous amount of resilience to do something like this. And then I guess the third thing is you need to be convinced that you're right. So I don't think I'm right in the way that Einstein would. You know, this isn't factual, and this isn't physics, and this is certainly not pure mathematics where it's something where there's a solution and I can prove I'm right. But I do believe that I was completely ahead of the curve. I saw clearly before anybody else did that we would have to change the way we consume. I saw very clearly before anybody else did that comfort in footwear was becoming absolutely important. I understand very clearly that fashion pushes unnecessary consumption, whereas just elegance and timelessness and style means you can have a level of self-satisfaction that you can focus on other aspects of your life. So I find it's very liberating to look good, but to not care about the fashion cycle. Mm-hmm. And then I think this whole notion of using technology to make the lives of women better is something that even in 2025, we could be doing a lot more of. So I think that the brand was really just much, much, much more ahead of the current mentality. So I think we were very forward thinking.
So it was a big challenge to invent your product, but it was a bigger challenge to sell and to
selling the product. Even today in 2025 is as difficult as it was in 2010. People will rationally say, oh, that's brilliant. And the number, if I had even €1 for everybody who said, oh, you're going to be a multimillionaire, I would be, you know, quite a successful individual. But the paradox is people think it's great, but they don't buy. And that is because fashion isn't like other products. In the fashion business, fashion is so much more about personal insecurity. So if you don't have the editor of Vogue or the editor of Marie Claire or women's magazines, or, you know, every group of friends has that one woman who's the best dressed woman in the room and she's the one who knows what brands everybody else is wearing. And if you don't become tribal, as in everybody in a group is wearing it, women don't move en masse. So that's one barrier. And then the other barrier is this all-powerful algorithm. So as a young or a small entrepreneur, because I'm not a young entrepreneur, but as a small entrepreneur whose skill set is not necessarily digital, having any kind of voice in an era where the most important skill set is digital makes my ability to succeed or fail as a business person very contingent upon mastery of digital. So I would say those are the two things that make my innovation more difficult than if it had been in cars, or certainly there would be industry barriers in the automobile industry. And if you look at a company like Dyson, which was always a huge inspiration for me, it took Mr. Dyson 12 years to sell his very first vacuum cleaner. So by that measure, Tanya Heath Paris is, you know, much more successful. I've been selling shoes since the concept was created. But what I absolutely underestimated was how negative the reaction would be. Mm-hmm. I have gone with my technology to the largest brands in France. I've even had the second largest brand in France tell me that mine is the best fashion technological product on the market, including the iWatch with Hermès. Yet they didn't want to invest in the company. They gave a whole bunch of reasons. Not one of them holds water. There is, I think, something destabilizing about what I do to the fashion world.
Okay. I love quite this things. I love the idea of mm-hmm. changing the hills, and I love the thoughts that I don't need so many things, but those that I possess are those that I love and use. And I love that it's possible to have vegan shoes. I love that you your production is in Europe. So there are so many things come together in your product that correspond with the things I'm I want to live with. All my
But that's because I have to live with it too. So I buy leather. It's not really my client who buys leather. So I have to be 100% sure, not just that the animals were treated as fairly as possible. Let's be very clear. We're killing those animals. But not just from the animal perspective, also from the environmental perspective. Yeah. So that pushes me to buy only a certain class of leather. I won't touch anything that isn't from the European food supply and that isn't in an environmentally improved tannery. So that already means my leather has a certain cost, but my leather has a certain ethics. I won't touch anything that has even a shred of exploitation in it. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the most unbelievable things I've done is everybody has been paid when we had a lot of employees. You know, I created those jobs and I was really proud to do it. We work purely in a European ecosystem. And it's not to say that the Chinese or Vietnamese person is less valuable than a European. I would never argue that. Mm-hmm. And I myself am half Asian. But what I would argue is we have a way of life, we have values, we have an ecosystem, and we have things that we have to stand up for and we have to fight for. And more than that, we should be projecting. Because a lot of what we do is the result of centuries of thought. And I think we've become too ashamed of who we are, possibly because of recent problems we've had. But I think this sort of pride in our philosophy and our worldview and our humanity and our kindness isn't projected as much as it should be. And what I was saying is this shoe is very political for me. So it's sort of a soft projection of things that I hold very dear to me. And so when you say it's important to you, that's very important. That's nice for me because I like to know that these values resonate with other people and that they're perceived.
Yeah. The only thing that I walk a lot, and I also love my barefoot shoes mm-hmm. without heels. So, but any time when I have shoes with heel, I take one off.
Yeah, yours, because so. I think you have to be. You know, you cannot be idiotic. My mentor was the CEO and owner, so he died recently, but he was the CEO and owner of a very large shoe brand. And he would look you in the eye and explain to you that this was the best shoe in the world and that with his shoe, you wouldn't need any other shoe. I can't do that because it's absurd. People go hiking. People need technical shoes. People might need sports shoes. So I prefer to be a lot more reasonable and humble. I think I make the best shoe for a dressed up situation, which could be a professional situation. It could be a wedding. It could be women who travel a lot for work. It could be any moment where you want to look good, feel special, and care about your appearance. And I think that's really what I make shoes for.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.